It is clear that Perioeci in Messenia had rebelled several times. Perhaps it was a move based more on loyalty than demographic concerns. We really don't know. And the figures we have deducing Spartan citizen decline are dubious at best and nothing like a complete census. We do know in 397 BC there was a conspiracy among Perioeci and others to carry out a revolt in Laconia. Conadin was the guy who was supposed to head this up. It was detected by the ephors and immediately crushed. How expensive and widespread that revolt would have been is anyone's guess. There's arguments that the Spartans were corrupted by the influx of vast amounts of money, and the Spartans just couldn't handle corruption. One man, Gylippus, is accused of embezzling funds. This is the man who had won the victory at Syracuse, and he embezzled funds in the final days serving with Lysander in the Navy. And again, is that a exceptional or is that a typical case? One thing is clearly is clear to me. The Spartan state was more than accustomed to using money, both in the form of coins, usually issued by Aegina or on the Aeginetan standard, as it would be, which is the weight standard in the Peloponnesus, or in the later stages of the Peloponnesian War, Athenian coins, Athenian money. The Athenians had coined vast numbers of tetradrachmi and silver drachmi, bearing the images of Athena and her owl. And these coins were clearly employed by the Spartans to pay the fleet, to pay mercenaries. The Spartan state was obviously able to deal in coin money, and many Spartans had large sums of plate, gold and silver, coins stored away as private wealth. And so these stories of avarice and moral corruption brought in by money, these are stock criticisms. One would find the same tradition in the Roman Republic, especially during the period of greatest Roman expansion in the late 3rd and 2nd century BC, played against the old rustic values of that wonderful traditional Rome of Cincinnatus and Romulus, which probably never existed anyway. So much of this moralizing that comes down to us about the Spartans suffering from their own defeat has to be taken very carefully. There's another point, and that is the point made in the last several lectures, that the Spartans won this war not through their efforts, but because they sold out the Ionian Greeks, they acquired Persian money, and the Persians bankrolled the Spartans to victory. Well, we've seen that that is an overdrawn position. At two points, the Persians intervened decisively. In 410, 409 BC, the Spartans were able to rebuild their fleet after the loss of Cyzicus, thanks to the Persian satrap Pharnabazus, who furnished the timber and the ports to do this. Cyrus the Younger came forth and allowed the Spartans to recover their naval position after the defeated Arginusae. There's a dramatic scene in Plutarch where he promises money to Lysander, now restored to favor and restored to command, that I will pay everything necessary, and if need be, I will break up my throne and melt it down. And clearly Cyrus provided the money that hired the sailors and built the ships that won the battle of Aegis Potami. So in that sense, Persian aid was decisive. But it was always provisional. It was always restricted only to the Spartan fleet serving in the Aegean. It had nothing to do with Spartan fleets serving in the Saronic Gulf, the Corinthian Gulf. They certainly didn't pay the Peloponnesian army fighting in Attica. And the Spartans had to prove that they were credible on the sea if Persian subsidies were to continue. And so that has to be qualified as well. And finally, Lysander himself. He's seen as the architect of victory and at the same time the architect or the would-be architect of the demise of the whole Spartan system. That too is overdrawn. In 403 BC, Lysander's position as secretary to the Navarch, it would have been his second term, expired. And Lysander really had no choice but to step down. There were now two kings in Sparta, Aegis II, who had commanded the forces at Decelea, a new king named Pausanias, the son of the deceased Pleistoanax, the Aegead king. They were clearly the natural leaders of any military operations that were necessary. The Gerousia and the Ephors had always ruled. They were not superseded. And Lysander really had to simply lay down his command and said that his next option was to take a tour to Crete. The Dorian cities of Crete were always a favorite spot for Spartans to go to whenever they didn't know what to do with themselves in Sparta. So that Lysander only made a comeback in 399 BC when there was a succession crisis a succession crisis that brought King Agesilaus to the throne. And then Agesilaus put Lysander very quickly back in his place.